everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. And remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/thedeltaflyers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Robbie.
Hey, buddy.
You remembered to wait and pause.
I did. I didn't cut you off.
You didn't cut me off.
In any of your intro.
Oh,
I like your shirt there.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty nifty.
Yeah.
Pretty graphic and cool. You got your full merch today. You got Delta Flyers hat.
I am very
merchy. Yes, ma'am shirt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've got the crew hat from season 7.
Yeah.
That's what I'm rocking.
You know, we've gone through so many iterations of this hat. I mean, it's still the same design. It's still a trucker cap, but we had one vendor in the very beginning, and then we switched to another one. We had a foam front one, and now we're back to cloth again. And it's a constantly evolving process where we go through and try different vendors and see what, you know, works the best. And so
that's a great hat, though. It's very popular.
It's a really great hat. Yeah.
It's stylish, you know.
Yes.
And for people that know about Star Trek, when you see it, you'll get it. But if you don't know about Star Trek, it just looks like a cool,
like a cool hat. Exactly. That you could wear anywhere. Yeah. And so the next reiteration of this, next version of this hat, I'm trying to get it on Richardson brand hat. That is the same company that made the Voyager Brewing Company hat that you have.
Oh, those are Richardson, nice hats too.
Very sturdy. But because of the pandemic, because of what we're dealing with right now, vendors are pulling their hair out, trying to meet demand. Richardson has been out of a black trucker cap for the last 9 months. It's just not even there. You can't even get it. So hopefully when vendors get back up to speed, and that means manufacturers as well, right? Not just the not just the people that provide the caps, but the ones that make them and then give them to the vendors to sell to wholesale. When that gets back up to speed, who knows when that will be?
Yeah.
We'll try another cap. We'll try the Richardsons with
the world is definitely changing with this pandemic. Like,
oh, it's my goodness.
Unbelievable how
it is.
Everything has adapted and everything is, we've all had to change,
you know, right?
Our habits and things like that. So,
unprecedented. Right.
Yes. Yes.
I don't think anybody really is still alive from the Spanish flu. If anyone's alive from the Spanish flu time, they are very old right now. they're like 122 or something. And so if they were alive, they were infants at that time.
Yeah.
So really no one alive now has really experienced anything like this.
No.
And that, you know, if anything, if we were to review the pandemic as a whole, as an episode, like how we review episodes, the lesson learned or the theme of the pandemic is learn to adapt.
Yeah.
Right. And they always say that about businesses. If you don't adapt, if you don't, you know, change with the times, you'll get lost or you'll be left behind and your business will fail. And now this is a lesson, not just for businesses, but for everyone worldwide, for life, period.
Yeah.
You got to learn how to adapt and change. All right.
What are we watching this week?
We're watching One.
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 Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay. So this is the shortest title, I think, of all.
Yes.
Right. Are there any other three letter, single word Voyager episodic titles? I'm going to say no.
I don't know. Three letters, maybe, but I'm trying to think of a two letter.
Well, then that would be We, but I don't think there's an episode called We or Or what else would you see? Say
or a
you,
number,
just or a number. Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. So this is the shortest one,
shortest title that I can think of.
All right.
So all let's right, go, let's watch, go it. Watch it. Let's go watch it.
All right. Patreon patrons, stay tuned for your bonus material. Okie dokie. We are back from watching one.
Yeah, I watched one.
Did you watch one?
I just went and watched one.
That's cool that you watched one. You didn't watch two. You just watched one. Yeah.
No, you know what's funny is, you know how we were talking about this may be the shortest name of a Star Trek episode? This actually did become the shortest name for a while until Q2.
Oh.
Became a couple years later became
the shortest episode and name.
Then Q2. There was an episode called E squared or something like that. Okay. That was like one letter with the square symbol.
Yeah.
So for a while, this was the shortest.
Okay.
Title of a Star Trek episode ever. So
right.
That's one thing we know.
That is one thing that we know. All right, let's start this up with our typical poetry synopsis. I will begin with my haiku. Here we go.
Okay.
My haiku for one. Nebula, too big. Stasis chambers are needed. Seven gets us through.
Oh wow, that was nice.
Thank you. All right,
that was really good. You captured a lot in those.
I did, in those short little few time.
Syllables.
So difficult.
Okay, here we go. My limerick for the episode one,
yes,
goes a little something like this.
Let's hear it.
Voyager enters a nebula no-fly zone where the new radiation can burn to the bone. Doc and Seven are a team. Then Seven has a real scary dream because no one likes being alone.
Ooh, yeah. Mm. I like it.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you.
Good job. Thank you. Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Limericks are always fun because it's almost impossible to capture the whole plot. There's no way. So you pick a couple of angles. Same with the haiku.
You got to go with the highlights. That's about it.
You got to go to the highlights. You got to pick one angle around it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Nice.
Agreed. Well, I would just want to, before we get into this recap, I want to bring up something on Twitter. And just so the fans know, Robbie's on his winter break. So we're doing a little banking of episodes. So this tweet, by the time you guys listen to this, this tweet will be a bit of an older tweet. So if you're going to search my Twitter, it happened on January the 4th. So I was answering a fan who says, Garrett, if they were to reboot Voyager, who would you like to see playing Harry Kim? And then I tweeted back. I said, the role of Harry Kim would naturally require an actor in their early 20s. But other than one of the members of the K-pop band BTS, the only name that came to mind was at Ken Jeong. I wrote Ken Jeong. And I said it could be a spinoff series called Star Trek, the 40-year-old ensign, starring Ken Jeong. And I've never met Ken Jeong, which is rare because typically one Asian actor knows every other Asian actor in the biz, right? So, but Ken Jeong kind of fell through the cracks in terms of my meeting him. And he immediately replied to my response. And I started laughing so hard because he says he's a huge, huge fan. I didn't even know.
Crazy.
I had no clue.
I never would have guessed that.
No, there's so many closet. There's a lot of closet Trek fans out there that don't really talk about how much they love Star Trek. But then when he comes down to it, when you find out, it's just like, oh my God, they're really, really into it. So in essence, he said he found a GIF with Harry Kim, and it says, you're a strong person at the bottom. It just shows Harry kind of saying something. And he says, OMG, I'm extremely flattered and honored that you would even mention me. I'm a huge fan, Garrett. Thank you for paving the way, brother. Okay, so he wrote, all right.
Wow.
So then I was like, oh my God, that's really incredible that he said that. So then I kind of retweeted him and I said back to him, I said, well, of course, because he thanked me. I said, it's kind of surreal that we haven't actually met at some random event yet. The only other Asian American actor that thanked me for paving the way, quote unquote, was at Daniel Dae Kim at an Asian award show. So proud of you both for all of your successes over the years. Way to represent. And now this got a lot of traction. All of a sudden, Brian Fuller sees this. And Brian Fuller's like, I need to see Ken Jeong in a Starfleet uniform. That's what he wrote down. And I said, you need this. I said, we all need this. So yeah. I may have inadvertently possibly
helped
Ken Jeong's being cast in a Star Trek episode. So it really made my day. To see.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that he was. Yeah. And so when I responded, of course, and it's kind of surreal, all this stuff, Ken Jeong then tweeted back with like a heart, two hearts and a hand, two hand. What does the hand gestures mean when they're up like this? Does that mean, what does that mean?
It's like, yes, like high yes, five,
like, hey, or something like that. Yeah. Then if you can see, he has a GIF of himself there bowing and it says, we're not worthy. Like, you know, he's not worthy of me. And then when he tweeted that, I found like a GIF of, can you see who that is? It's, it's basically, from Lord of the Rings. Uh-huh. It's Aragorn's character at the very end. When the hobbits save everything, the hobbits kneel down to him. And then Aragorn looks them at the hobbits and says, you bow to no one, because they're the ones that save the day. Right. So really fun, though, that Twitter exchange with Ken Jeong, you know,
very cool.
Yeah. Who arguably is probably at the forefront of at least Asians in Hollywood. I mean, goodness gracious, he's doing all kinds of things right now.
He's a busy man, a very talented man.
Busy dude.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. That's a quick little segue there. Let's get into the episode.
Ken was not in the episode.
He was not in the episode one. No. No, actually, I think Ken played the Nebula. He was just flying through him
Yes. All right. So one is written by Jerry Taylor, which is really interesting because you know, as Michael Piller left and then Jerry Taylor left our show, it seemed like it was sort of this slow, it was talked about they were going to leave, but then they were still around a little, but then they were kind of half in and half out. So I feel like this may be one of Jerry's last scripts, actually. Mm. This is the end of season four. I just don't believe that she stayed on beyond season four.
Okay.
But I don't remember, you know, I have, as it's well documented, I have a really bad memory, so I could be wrong, but this feels like maybe her last script. So I just thought that was interesting. I may be wrong, but we'll see.
Well, I hope you're wrong. I enjoyed Jerry Taylor's scripts.
I know. She was like the heart of our show.
She was. So I hope really there's was. More. I hope there's more.
Mm-hmm. Directed by Ken Biller.
This is who was his one first of our... time directing.
No, this is his second time.
What?
It's his second time this season. He directed, was it Revulsion or Repulsion? He directed something earlier in season four.
Oh.
He came out and started directing quite a bit this year, which, you know, Ken Biller had a meteoric rise on our show. He started as an entry-level story editor, season one. He was as low as you could get in terms of being a writer starting writer. And he had come from, I think he had been an executive, like a studio or network exec. He'd worked in kind of the studio system a bit. So this was maybe even his first writing job ever, staff job ever. I don't know, but I feel like he and I talked about that early on. And he was just starting out, and then to be directing in season four. And ultimately we know he was running the show by the last season. He was the showrunner.
He is the crazy. Bob Picardo of writers. Cause if you think about it, Bob Picardo's character was supposed to be the least utilized on Voyager. He was number nine on the call sheet, which means least utilized of all series regulars. And he parlayed that into the breakout character of the show. Yeah, just like Ken Biller was the least utilized writer, staff writer in the lowest tier.
In the beginning.
Yes.
And became the most powerful writer. He was the showrunner.
He became the showrunner.
By the end. And then created, you know, went off to run and create his own shows after this. After Voyager. But anyway, Ken Biller directing a second episode. Mm-hmm. Our guest stars, we had Wade Williams playing Trajus Lotaric. Mm-hmm. We didn't hear the name mentioned very much, but Trajus, I think, was the name. The other guest star is Ron Ostro, who played the Borg drone. So that's our guest stars that I could find.
Did Ron get a credit at the beginning of the ep? Because I just saw Wade Williams' name. I didn't even see
I think
Ron's
he got
name.
A credit at the end. You the very know, end. Also okay. Starring, co-starring or something like that.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. So we.
Thanks for filling us in.
Yeah, that's our cast. So we open in the mess hall.
Mm.
And Seven walks into a close-up with the starfield in the background, mm-hmm. which I thought was very interesting because it's an interesting opening shot because it's a little unconventional for us. She walks into this close-up. And then as she moves back, the camera moves faster back to reveal Harry and B'Elanna mm-hmm. in the mess hall.
Yeah.
And she approaches them. And I really like this scene a lot.
Yeah.
This first scene.
It's funny.
She asks Ensign Kim, she has a few questions for them. So she says to Harry, what was your place of origin?
Yeah.
Very abruptly, but like a interrogation. And he sort of answers, he was born in South Carolina, mm-hmm. which I never knew. I never knew Harry was born in South Carolina.
They gave me that choice.
And you picked South Carolina?
Because I was dating Danielle Corley at the time.
Oh,
Miss
that's
South
funny.
Carolina herself, Miss South Carolina, the USA pageant back in the day. And then she went on to do body shaping on ESPN. So she had a little bit of her own fame, but her father was a huge Star Trek fan. Massive.
Oh, that's funny.
So in honor of her dad, I was like, you know what? Let me make her dad happy. You know, I'm going to choose South Carolina.
Otherwise, funny.
I would have chosen Tennessee because that, you know, I went from fifth grade to senior year in high school in Memphis. So I would have.
That's like home. Yeah.
Childhood so home. I selected South Carolina to kind of get brownie points with my girlfriend at the time's father. So
well, clearly it didn't work out. It wasn't enough.
It wasn't enough.
It's immortalized in Star Trek, but it wasn't enough.
No.
Okay. Then she turns to Lieutenant Torres and right. says, explain why you became a member of the Maquis. So yes. B'Elanna's like, oh, well, okay. Right. It was through Chakotay. And again, she cuts off B'Elanna off. Before, yeah. before you could finish and then before B'Elanna can finish.
Yeah.
And then she says to Harry, list the sports you play.
Yes.
And you list some sports, which I thought was interesting, by the way.
Yeah, my selection. Tennis.
Volleyball.
Right.
Yeah, tennis.
Tennis, Parisi squares, which I would rather call Paris's squares. It sounds you know, more like your game, right?
Thanks, buddy.
But we do find, you're welcome, but we do find that volleyball is his favorite. Now, I don't know.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
Where did that come from?
Well, I will say this. I think maybe Ken... Or maybe... not. Well, Ken didn't
Jerry?
Write this. It was Jerry. Maybe Jerry asked me because... I played tennis in high school, junior high and high school. And volleyball is one of my favorite sports to watch. I actually love volleyball. So that shocked me when I saw, when I was watching.
They
the
must
episode.
Have asked you these
I thought
things.
They had to have asked me this. Otherwise, how would this come up? It's too much of a coincidence. You know what I'm saying? Like, why would you say tennis and then Parisi Square's futuristic Star Trek game and then volleyball is his favorite? Yeah. A little odd. Yeah. Unless it was ordained that way by, you know, a quick phone call. Hey, what sports do you like? We're going to throw this into the episode. So that's what I think happened.
And then her next couple of questions are justify the foods you find enjoyable.
Yeah.
Right. I love her language. And then she says to B'Elanna, describe the nature of your sexual relationship with Lieutenant Paris.
My favorite
question. B'Elanna's like, okay, that's it.
My favorite question right there.
I'm done.
Did you laugh at that?
You
LOL'd on that one, didn't you?
I did. I did. That's when the doctor comes in and freezes the program and we realize we're in a simulation.
Yeah, it's a holodeck simulation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he wanted her to get comfortable with them people, not interrogate them. So, and she's like, I don't see this is a waste of time. She says, you know what? I'm overdue for my medical maintenance checkup. And he's like, well, that's weird. You haven't ever requested a.
Yeah, you're never someone who enjoys those treatments. And she goes, yes. Well, I enjoy those treatments better than this treatment. And this holiday. And she leaves. Great opening scene, though. I very funny. And
great opening scene. Yeah.
I liked it.
We go to a cool flyby of the ship and we notice this nebula is very interesting. It's a beautiful kind of purple color. We see,
by the way, did you not notice I changed my background from our intro?
You did.
My intro changed to my now to nebula-esque background.
Yeah.
So to get into the spirit. Get into the
nebula
episode.
Spirit. Yes. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah. Continue.
Yeah. So we find out this nebula is enormous. It goes beyond the reach of our sensors. Going around the nebula would take, way too long.
Yeah.
And so Janeway says, let's go through it.
It's crazy to think that it's so vast that it extends beyond the reach of our sensors. It's like, what? I thought our sensors were so modern, so futuristic and so amazing that they would pick everything up, right? But no, they can't even pick up.
We can't see where the sides are. So we're just going to, we see how deep it is. So let's just go through it.
Mutara class. Is that what they said?
Mutara class. Something like that.
That's right.
So we start to go through it and Harry's the first one to sort of have a little discomfort. I don't know what's up. All of a sudden he's like, he makes some noises up there. And
Harry's so sensitive.
Yeah. And then, yes, exactly. He's the most sensitive one on the bridge, clearly. And then Janeway says, are you okay? And he goes, oh, no, it's just starting to get a headache. Yeah,
it's a little headache. Oh.
And then suddenly, within seconds, Paris starts to wince.
Yeah.
And then Janeway and Chakotay, even Tuvok, the Vulcan, the strong man, he's feeling some pain.
Yeah.
And we do notice that Harry's the first one to get some burns, like his skin is starting to.
None of you guys had to have burn treatment on that first scene.
Not in that
it was
scene.
Just me.
Yep.
Junk on my hands. Weird stuff on my hands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's how we end the opening, that opening sequence with everybody wincing in pain.
Yeah.
And I got to say, there was a lot of Shatner acting going on. There was a lot of
that's in my video reaction in the bonus materials for the Patreon patrons. That was my first
reenacting,
not the very first. It was the second video. I actually reacted to something else before that. So it was Shatner-esque. By
everybody
all
was
us.
Doing their best Shatner. It was amazing.
It was amazing.
It
was a tribute to Bill. I think
it really
Bill,
was.
I think Bill would be proud if he saw that. He'd be like, I love that, is what he would say. So.
So we go to our opening credits, then we come back and we're still on the bridge and Janeway's like, turn around, Lieutenant Paris, turn around, set a course, reverse, full thrusters reverse or whatever she says.
But you collapse.
Paris can't, he's like, I'm Shatner acting so hard, I pass out.
You Shatner it and you fall to the ground.
Yeah, right? We cut to sick bay. The doctor is overwhelmed. He's like, what is going on? He sends Seven to the bridge with a dermal regenerator.
Mm-hmm.
He's got burn patients all out in sick bay.
Yeah.
Tuvok is struggling.
He stumbles
down to the con, lays in a course to turn around. And as soon as the ship turns around, within moments, we turn around, get out of that nebula. Everybody's feeling better.
Everyone's okay. But here's the question. Why did Tuvok need to leave his station to come down to your station to turn around the ship? I mean, shouldn't every station have access to helm control? I mean,
I would think so.
It's so weird. I mean, he had to leave tactical, but of course, it was really more to show how he was being affected by it, right? Like
he was struggling. Yeah. And also, without words, to make it clear that he was doing something navigational.
I suppose.
As opposed to his normal thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But you're right. I think that these computers should be able to.
They should be advanced enough that you. Yes. Yeah. I should be able to change the coordinates of our direction from my console, as well as Tuvok at tactical, as well as Janeway. Janeway should be able to tap a couple commands over at her little clamshell display thing that pops up, right? That should be a given. But in order to show people.
Don't we all have Wi-Fi on the bridge?
We should.
Aren't we all connected to the interwebs?
We're all connected.
Just pull up whatever window, go to a website, and
Khan
comes up. Anyway,
when Seven comes onto the bridge, she sees the one dead crewman, And the first time that? That, well, the first time we see him, I said, oh, it's Pablo. And then it cuts away and then from the shot of the dead crewman to somebody else on the bridge. And then it cuts back to another close up of the dead crewman. And then I'm looking at the hair. I'm like, wait a minute. That's not Pablo's hair.
That's not Pablo.
I go, that's Louis. That's Louis's hair. Louis? It looked like Louis. But then I started thinking they probably would have picked someone brand new because you're not going to kill off one of our regular background actors because we need them. We can't just kill all those guys off. We have to have them for the extent of the show. So I think it was just some random person. We are now in Astrometrics.
Yes.
And we find out that this nebula extends for at least 110 light years. A month to get through and more than a year to get around. That is a big, big nebula.
Yeah.
You know, so this is the info
and it's
we
just
get
Janeway
seven.
And seven.
And Janeway, yeah.
Seven and Janeway and Astrometrics. And Janeway is, she is not going to be deterred by this. Seven's like the crew will not survive for more than, you know, moments here.
Yeah.
The way that they reacted to this, there's no way they're going to survive going through this thing. Mm-hmm. Janeway's like, we've got to figure this out.
Yeah.
This nebula is not going to stop me. And she marches out of Astrometrics to go find an answer.
With that music in the background, you can always tell when Janeway's not going to be deterred because there's this really crescendo of background orchestral music going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm. One thing I noticed in this scene is I noticed this pattern. And then it comes up throughout where the shots would start on something tight and sort of pull back into a close up. I saw it a lot in this episode, like more than normal.
Yes.
Sort of falling into a pattern. So it was really nice when, wide shots or there was more variety. And I started thinking, like, I wonder why. I think there were a lot more scenes and setups in this episode than our average show because it was just Seven of Nine by herself. So she had to be moving around all the time. She had to go to a new room and a new hallway and a new this. So there was a lot of like start on something tight and pull back. And I noticed that in Astrometrics as well.
I wonder if this was Ken Biller's doing or was it Marvin?
Maybe. I mean, usually the director has some plans of how they're going to transition and open each scene. Maybe Ken had planned on a lot of these. You know, it could have been a choice, but but it was interesting. It was something I noticed and it sounds like you noticed it as well.
I sure did. I did make a note about one particular scene later that we'll get to. So, So whether it was Marvin's doing or Ken's doing, it was definitely a thematic choice to do this pull out in multiple scenes. Okay. Let's move on.
We go to sick bay next. So the doctor's explaining that there's massive amounts of subnucleonic radiation that are causing all of the skin, you know, inflammation or burns or whatever. And he says there's nothing that he can do. He can't prevent, you know, the effects from happening. The only thing he can suggest is a stasis chamber.
Yes.
And Jane was like, who's going to fly the ship? And I love that he volunteers. He's like, well, I have shown rudimentary piloting skills. So the doctor was like, wait a minute. The doctor is going to pilot the ship? I was like, wow, that surprised me that he was literally going to pilot it. But I guess, you know, to his credit, he has, you know, access to all of the information on our ship's computer. So he is a smart choice. And he volunteers to pilot the ship. And she says, you're going to need a backup. In case you go offline, you need someone or something to back you up in case there's a problem, which there is later on, so thank goodness. And he says the only one that there's only one person that's unaffected. And off of that question, we cut to a scene with Janeway and Seven. And again, it's another close-up. It starts in this close-up, so this thematic sort of starting on Seven in a close-up.
Can I stop you for a second here? Can we just rewind just a little bit and go back to the sick bay before we jump into the cargo bay?
Yeah, go.
From that scene alone, I realize that Star Trek Voyager has the answer for the current pandemic that we're in.
Stasis chambers.
Yes.
Yes.
If we put everyone in the world into a stasis chamber for 1 month, we would stop COVID in its tracks. Dead in its tracks.
You can't. Wow.
Am I right?
You're right. Let's do it. Let's do Stasis Chambers.
I'm just telling you, Star Trek Voyager is the most important show on television. Everyone should watch this show.
I mean, basically a stasis chamber is like life support, right?
Yeah.
So we would have to put everybody on the planet.
Yes.
In the planet on life support.
Yes.
For a month.
Except for Bob Picardo. He can still run everything.
Oh, he'd be fine.
Yeah,
he'd be fine.
Him and Jerry Ryan will help make sure, maintain all, what is the world population? How many billion is it? They'll have to maintain.
A lot of billions.
Yes, they'll have to maintain all of these.
Keep Earth going for a month while we all go.
That's fine.
Wow.
It can be done.
If we had those life support stasis chambers, by the way, they look pretty comfy. I mean, I remember being in there. It was not that bad.
It wasn't. It was just those days that we were in there, and
you and I were in there the most.
We were. But I just, it was so, one of the easiest days acting of all, because we didn't have to say anything. We just got to lie down.
Go lie down.
quite pleasant. Yeah. All right. Jump to the cargo bay. We are with Janeway and Seven. Janeway is talking to Seven.
We jump to the cargo bay. And again, we start on a close up of Seven. So, again, this pattern I kept noticing early on of starting these scenes with something tight or close up or something. Mm-hmm. But Janeway is proposing to Seven that she stay with the doctor. And Janeway does bring up right away, she's worried that she's going to feel too lonely without the crew. Mm-hmm. That it was hard for her to adapt from the collective to our crew of nearly 200 people.
Right.
And now she's going to have to adapt from the whole crew to just one person around. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she says, I will adapt. And she also talks about how it's going to work. And Janeway says the doctor is going to be in command.
You will obey all his orders. And she's like, a hologram. She says it with such like, really,
yes.
You're going to make me obey a hologram. And I just like her insolent
little attitude.
Yes. It's still
she does
there.
Attitude very well.
She does,
but she agrees. She agrees. Mm-hmm. And so now we know what's happening. So we go to the briefing room and we're in the briefing room.
Janeway's briefing the crew. Chakotay. Yep. Janeway's basically saying, look, this is what's going to happen, right? This is the only way we can deal with this. Everyone then leaves the meeting and Chakotay stays behind after the meeting and he expresses his reservations. And then the bottom line is he agrees with her after she says, instinct. I have an instinct. And instinct is the reason why Janeway is trusting Seven, even though she has this insolent attitude. And I just love how Chakotay is like, okay. It's good enough for you. It's good enough for me.
Exactly.
you got a hunch about this? We only have all the lives of the crew at stake. That's all. But hey, I'm good.
If you've got a hunch.
If you got a hunch, I'm good with it.
By the way, at the very end.
Yes.
She says, see you at 1700 hours. Or one of them says, see you at 1700 hours.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Her hand goes up on his shoulder.
Oh.
And it kind of lingers there a little long, kind of pats and rubs
moment.
Him. I'm telling you. They should have had their own stasis chamber, those two.
Robbie, we need to come up with like a JC song, like theme a jingle,
song?
A theme song, like a JC moment theme song jingle jangle that we can come up with.
Yeah.
Where we just kind of play it. We just have it pre-recorded and we can just hit a button or we can edit it in where you hear that little jangle. Jingle,
it's a little
jangle.
JC moment. Well, that was one.
That's
that
one right
one
there.
One with the shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Good catch there. Good catch there.
Yeah. All right. Go to deck 14.
Right.
Which is where the stasis deck is.
Yes.
And Paris is panicking.
I wrote, Tom is a worry wart, is what I wrote.
He was panicking.
My goodness. You were having a pre-anxiety attack right there.
Yeah.
You were not.
It does track later on. I was like, why am I being so.
Yeah. Why is he like this?
Why am I being so dramatic about this? Nobody else is. I love Harry's line. He says, shall we replicate you a teddy bear? Thank you for that. Nighty night.
I'm going to make a t-shirt with that on there.
Yeah.
Should we replicate you a teddy bear? And then I kept thinking, man, they did not have enough money for this episode because there's only four stasis chambers. And then, of course, it pulls back to another pullback to reveal more stasis chambers in another side room and more on a higher level of deck 14, evidently, well, right?
I will say there's a continuity failure here because...
Okay.
Go. Okay, so a couple things about these stasis chambers. You and I are but closest to the door. I don't know why I'm not somewhere near B'Elanna.
Well, that's what I wrote too. Why are you not next to B'Elanna? And then I wrote, Tom should be in a duo stasis chamber with B'Elanna. Yeah. Like couples together. Like
exactly.
You guys
get it. Yeah. That would be sweet.
Why?
But you and I were closest to the door. That's why we were in all the other shots later on. And then at the end of the scene, Janeway walks like three or four stasis chambers away from the door so she can get in hers.
In hers, yeah.
Because I'm sure that Ken Biller and Marvin, those guys were like, let's put Janeway in one further away so when we're doing all these other scenes,
we don't have to call her in
to lay down and be an extra down there in the background.
But for our two young guys,
what the heck? Put them up front.
Yeah, they're young. They have energy. They can come to work. Yeah.
The other thing about that pullback that you talked about, so it was a VisiFX. They did not have enough money to physically build.
Correct. Yeah, that's
more than maybe five or six stasis chambers.
From what you see, the Tom and Janeway, and then the other extra. Tuvok. You do see Tuvok. It goes Tom, Harry, random background female.
Mm-hmm.
Then I saw, I think
Janeway's was
either Tuvok. Janeway's, but then I saw two. I did see Tuvok's little face in one of them. So he's on that main level. Right.
So there's maybe five of those.
Them. Yeah.
And then they pull back in a wide shot and you see off on one side and up above, off to the side that these.
There's another room almost.
There's like a room at the end of that cargo bay or that stasis chamber bay. And then there's a balcony with more off in the distance.
Right.
But later on.
The mezzanine level.
Yeah. The mezzanine level.
Yeah.
But later on, by the way, when Seven comes in and she looks in there and Paris is asleep, she heard his voice.
You don't see the backside
of it. You don't see any of them. I'm like, all you see now is five.
You caught it.
And
you
I was like, it, guys, McNeil. Come on. If you're gonna put it in the earlier shot, you bought it now. You gotta pay for it again. And they didn't do it.
TV production 101. What are we doing, people?
That was my biggest continuity complaint. When she looks in there and there's only five in the room, I was like, you just showed us about 150 in that last scene. And now we see five.
Yeah, no, totally.
Does not match.
Doesn't work. You caught it.
Yeah.
You caught it. Good for you.
All right. That's the end of the stasis chamber scene. We go back to another flyby. There's a purple nebula now.
Yeah, and it's Seven of Nine's personal log. Is this her first personal log, or has she done one before?
Yeah,
I don't remember. Yeah,
I don't think so. I think this is the first time I've heard a personal log from Seven of Nine.
Okay, well, let me jump through this then. So then she's, you know, we have the personal log. So it begins with the exterior nebula space shot, nebula space shot, and then it continues as Seven is walking through the corridors, and it ends at mess hall, which is empty, which is sad, and then she replicates a nutritional supplement 14 beta 7. Can you imagine if this is how we actually all spoke in this way?
She gets a mug of coffee. I was like, nutritional supplement 14 beta 7. That's 13 syllables or coffee.
So I know, but I'm just imagining you saying to Rebecca, hey hon, what's for dinner tonight? And she answers, nutritional supplement 14 beta 5. Or she just, if everyone spoke like that, this would be crazy. Why do nutritional supplements sound just like evasive maneuvers? In Seven of Nine, right?
Yeah.
And this is they're almost identical.
It's all the same to her. It's all the same.
Evasive maneuver, 14 beta 7, nutritional supplement, 14 beta 7. It's so Borg-like and it's so funny to me whenever she talks. Mm-hmm. Just humorous.
Yeah. So she's having her coffee and she's got a routine going on. And, you know, we're at low power mode. The lights are all out. It's already a little creepy. She goes to engineering and it's completely empty.
Yeah.
She checks a console in there and beep, beep, beep. And then she exits there. She's doing her rounds and she goes to the bridge. Bridge.
I didn't write creepy. I just said sad. It just looks so sad.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't creeped out. I was bummed for her.
Yeah. Yeah. It was sad. It was sad. She goes to the bridge.
Yeah.
It's empty. She goes down to Con, adjusts the heading by 3.7 degrees starboard. And then she goes back out into the hall for part of her routine. And she rounds a corner and sees Paris on the floor. And the door is like,
how many times that thing hit you in the head and you didn't even know?
I don't remember.
And why, like, where are your boils? You should be covered in lesions and boils at this point. You're not.
I'm caught in like the grocery store doors. Like they just keep pass that on the floor.
You know,
she calls the doctor.
They should have showed more of that because you only see the one. If they let it go for three or four times, that would be comedy. Comedy, right?
That would be
the sitcom version.
Yes.
That's the Orville version of Voyager.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, continue.
Then we go back in the stasis bay, and the doctor is shutting the window on Paris again. He says no ill effects,
right.
Nothing bad. He wasn't gone long enough. He just made it to the door, so before he passed out.
So let's recreate what happened. So you got claustrophobic. You flipped out. You unlocked your stasis chamber. You get out. Then you start feeling the effects of the headache. Then you start doing the Shatner. You're like, and then you pass out without any lesions or anything else.
No lesions. I don't even make it out the door. Yeah. But let's go back for a minute.
All right.
To the part where you said, I get up and open my stasis chamber.
Yeah.
I'm in stasis.
Yes.
How the heck did I wake up? And by the way, I did this four times, we learned later on.
Okay.
How did I? Yeah. I could somehow, great. I have a superpower to break stasis unlike any other human.
No, you did not. You did not break stasis. You did not wake up. You effectively sleepwalked is what you did. That's what I'm thinking, right? People do things while they're sleeping that they don't recall. So while you slept, you were like, beep, beep, beep. Yeah, so somehow you pressed the right code to open up.
Four times.
There's a lot of holes in the script, okay?
Yeah.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
But still.
All right.
All right. We believe it.
And the doctor makes a joke and Seven doesn't laugh.
No.
And he says, even if you had the slightest sense of humor, you'd realize I was making a small joke. And then Seven goes, very small.
Yeah.
I laughed.
I did too. They're getting on each other's nerves. And this
starting to get on each other's nerves.
But by it's the natural. Way,
by the way, the doctor says also, he goes, give me the life signs or vital signs. And she starts calling out vital signs. And she says at one point, body temperature, 97.6. And all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute, Fahrenheit? We speak metric on this show in every way. Why would she? I mean, I don't know the conversion because I don't use metric, but I'm sure
Celsius then is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Robbie, I got to tell you, you are Sherlock Holmes on this episode. You have just, you've just found all these little discrepancies. It's very impressive.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Good job.
The doctor says, they start bickering and he's like, you know what? We need to go to the holodeck.
Yeah.
And
you need to brush up.
Like,
you need
a
brush up course on how to deal with people in the holodeck.
How to deal with people because you're getting on my nerves.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want to go. And he goes, this isn't a suggestion and it's not a request. It's an order.
An order from
because Captain
Doctor.
He's Captain, exactly.
I know, but here's the thing. He doesn't have a name, so you're going to call him Captain Doctor?
Captain Doctor.
Which is a little confusing because you're the captain and you're the doctor.
Or the doctor.
No, I'm Captain Doctor. How about a hybrid name? Captain and Doctor get Captor.
Copter?
He's Captor. Copter. Or Docton. He's Docton. Follow the orders of Docton right now.
Okay. I like that. That's a good one.
I like it.
All right, so we cut to the mess hall. Clearly, it's a holodeck simulation of a party in the mess hall, and Neelix is passing hors d'oeuvres. Mm-hmm. Janeway is in a very casual dress, which I never saw before. I don't think we see again.
No.
Casual dress. Chakotay, I see, walk in the background. He's in a nice party suit. I thought everybody looked good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, were we in this scene?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. Seven's in there, Neelix.
I think the producers felt bad that we were, you know, used as background in the stasis chamber so much. They're like, you know what? Let's give them a
day off.
Let's make Chakotay the background guy today. Exactly.
And Janeway, basically. No, she's got a couple lines.
She had a line. She did.
Yeah. But Seven's standing alone. Neelix approaches and says, hey, you should join the party. And she's like, I have no desire for fun.
Yeah, she's working on a pad. She's attempting to recalibrate the warp field to resist the nebula's radiation.
Yeah.
And so she asks Neelix for his help on this. Mm-hmm. She shows him the pad and the work that she's done. And he's like, oh, well, that's interesting. I think maybe we could do this. And then she calls for Janeway to come over.
Maybe Janeway can help. So she's trying to show interest in people.
Mm-hmm.
So Janeway and Neelix start working it out. They're both kind of spitballing ideas. Right. And the doctor steps up.
The doctor kind of rolls his eyes, though. You see that, right? Yeah. So
freezes the program again. Mm-hmm. By the way, he steps into a foreshot. It's Neelix, Janeway, Seven, and the doctor steps around and says, computer freeze program.
Yeah.
And Janeway and Neelix freeze, and maybe some extras behind. And then the doctor pulls Seven over to the side, so they're all alone.
Correct.
And I thought, oh, they want to get them away from the actors who are pretending to freeze. Because if they stood there the whole time,
they would be moving.
Kate would have to hold still, and then she'd be in the coverage. And
yeah.
So it's funny. That, do you remember doing that when we would have these like freeze program moments where people would freeze?
Yeah.
And sometimes you'd do it in a split screen so that you didn't have to hold it the whole time. They'd do it as a VisFX, but sometimes you actually had to freeze.
Yes.
And I just had this moment of like, oh, they just called and freeze.
Yeah.
And now they're walking away so that they, you know, are getting.
Did you notice? Did you notice this, Sherlock Paris Holmes?
Yes.
Her, when he says freeze, her right arm and hand moves a little bit.
Oh, it does.
It does. If you go back and watch it, after the freeze happens, she freezes and then she readjusts a little bit. You can see a little bit.
That's
of
what I'm saying. Yeah, it's that's like, why they got him out of it. Because there's no reason for him to walk her away.
Yeah, no.
Except to get the visual effects off of the actors.
Exactly.
There's no background behind them in any of their coverage either. So clearly they were trying to avoid any vis effects or freezy actor things.
Yeah, it worked for the most part, except for Kate moving her arm. That's it. We get a warning signal now. We get a warning signal that the antimatter storage tanks are failing. And that's when the doctor and Seven leave this holodeck simulation. They walk out into the corridor and they're now at a wall console and they're tapping away.
I think they're at a wall console. I mean, this is the problem with I wrote hall question mark because the problem with these kind of this pattern of starting tight and pulling back, which then happens. Right. I don't know where I am. Like, are we? So I think we were in the hallway because they just came out of mess hall, but unclear. Right. Anyway, they're at a console somewhere.
Yeah. So they're at the wall console and they have to eject the antimatter tanks. And the doctor says that they have to coordinate their efforts. So he orders Seven to go to engineering while he runs off to the bridge.
Yep.
So now the next scene is sort of jumping back and forth between the bridge and Seven in the corridors walking towards engineering. And you're getting all these just messages of things happening and that engineering is filled with plasma, not
flooded.
Plasma, but plasma
flooded with plasma. It. She'll never get in.
She'll never be able to get in, according to the doctor. And
she says, I'll survive long enough to eject the assembly.
Right.
I've got to do this.
Right.
And the doctor's around the corner panicking.
Yeah. High stakes.
The hull is breaching. Like all the information the doctor's getting is that this is a disaster.
Right.
And she walks into engineering.
Oh, she comes around the corner and the engineering doors open up and everything's fine. There's nothing wrong. And she realizes this is a false alarm. Mm-hmm. This is something's going on. So now in the next scene, this is why I wrote, where are they? ?
That's what I'm saying.
This is the one where we have no
shots.
Yeah. This is,
I don't know where we are,
whether they're in the science lab area or not. I have no clue. It could be sick bay, science lab. It could be anywhere. And they are now realizing that there are malfunctions going on in a number of our neural gel packs, the bioneural gel packs that sort of set Voyager, this Intrepid class starship, apart from any other starship at the time, is that we have these bioneural gel packs and they're the ones that are malfunctioning. So the mission is to replace these malfunctioning gel packs, and to access these gel packs, they have to go through the Jeffries tube, crawling through the horribly uncomfortable Jeffries tube. And while they're in the tube and they get to their destination, trying to replace this neural gel pack.
While they're in the Jeffries tubes, I loved when the doctor starts complaining about how small the tubes are.
Yeah.
He goes, when they were designing this, why did they make them so small? He's complaining. You know, they should be big enough that we could stand up and walk. And she's like, you know, there's no use in complaining. There's nothing we can do about it. And he goes, oh yeah, complaining is very comforting to me. I love that exchange.
Yes. And I mean, he basically verbalized what every actor on Star Trek has always thought. Why can't we just stand up in these dang things? Just make them really narrow, right? But just at least vertically high enough to stand up for a normal human being.
But no, we gotta crawl through.
Yeah, we gotta crawl through.
And they get to this juncture, and there's a black gel pack. Did you notice that?
Yeah, like, it was not lit up.
Some look good. Most of them look good, but you could see the ones that were damaged. So.
Yeah. So they replaced that one. And, you know, just to add insult to injury, now the doctor starts to fritz and he's just, and, you know, this is the time when the doctor is saying, I need to get back to sick bay or else my program might be lost. And so they're running.
Yeah. If my program goes offline while I'm out of sick bay, then it may be irretrievable, he says.
Yes,
he could be. And he says, I love this quote. He goes, I'm facing cybernetic oblivion.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Cybernetic oblivion.
I'm facing cybernetic oblivion.
Okay.
It's very dramatic. I was thinking, why didn't he just transfer his program instantaneously back to sickbay? Why does he have to physically run all the way back there?
Because they wanted the audience to see how the doctor runs. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, he could have just said, computer, transfer my program back to sickbay. And we've seen this before. And then the mobile emitter would have fallen on the ground. And then she could have picked it up and gone back slowly without running.
Or a site-to-site transport, right? Just transport yourself. You don't have to just, you know, transfer your program. Just
no, but they wanted the running montage. They wanted the running
montage. They got that montage.
All right.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right.
We're in sick bay.
Yes, we are in sick bay. The doctor is so happy to be there. And we realize his mobile emitter has been damaged.
Yes.
So now he's kind of stuck in sick bay. He can't really leave. And he tells Seven, hey, it's now all up to you to keep this ship running.
Yep.
Which Seven is, I'm sure, quite apprehensive about, but she has to do what she has to do. She has to adapt. She can't complain.
Another beautiful ship shot. Some beautiful ship shots in this.
Yeah.
And then we come in on another close-up of Seven, starting close-up and pulling back. And this time we pull back and we realize she's on a glacier.
Yeah.
Some kind of like ice glacier-y thing.
Frozen tundra.
I have to say, I didn't like this vis effect. I didn't think it looked very good. The angles were weird. Her feet were sort of, looked like they were sort of in the snow, but it looked uncanny valley. You know, that expression where just something is not, it just didn't look real to me. And it was confusing. Like, I wish she had had some lines like, where am I or anything? She just sort of looked around and then
I'm going to play devil's advocate. It's her dream, and dreams are just weird, period. So I'm okay with the uncanny valley. I'm okay that it didn't really make any sense, that she had no lines, because people's dreams make no sense at all.
Yeah.
It's just how it is. They're just bizarre. They're weird. They make no sense. They look weird.
But we didn't know it was a dream.
No.
Initially, until the big shot pulls back. It's a long shot. It goes on a while. And then we hear the computer say, 600 hours, regeneration sequence completed. Mm-hmm. And so now we know, oh, she was just dreaming and this is like her wake up call. And we
wonder if this is foreshadowing. I wonder if this is foreshadowing to the episode Timeless from season 5, where the ship crashes into the ice planet. So I almost felt like, this looks a lot like,
I don't know that they had the stories figured out that far in advance, but they may have remembered that image and said, hey, what if we tie back to something like that?
Right. Yeah. Okay. So it's inadvertent and coincidental foreshadowing.
Maybe
is what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she wakes up and she's in her regeneration pod. Mm-hmm. There's a nice Dutch angle close up that we start the scene on.
Which I like that.
We don't normally do Dutch angles. I know that Rick Berman was not a big fan of Dutch angles.
Yeah. I'm shocked that Ken was able to get that through.
But he did it. Yeah, he did a nice Dutch angle. Mm-hmm. And then this, as she steps out of the chamber in the close up, we go to a high wide shot and we see that whole cargo bay real wide as she starts transcribing out loud another personal log.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was a beautiful wide shot. It was such a relief and a nice change to get that high wide shot and just let it play in the environment a little bit. It looked really cool.
Yeah. We also learned from her personal log that it's the 29th day traveling through the nebula, the Mutara Nebula, and that she, 7, has been feeling the effects of the prolonged isolation. And we also learned that the ship systems are requiring constant maintenance all the time. So something is always failing and she has to be on top of it. Mm-hmm. Like for instance, this morning, she must purge the auxiliary plasma vents. So that's her job for the morning. We then jump to the bridge where 7 is still going through her day, just checking up on everything. She's trying to adjust the heading by 0.31 degrees to the port. And the computer is glitching and not accepting her commands.
First, there's no response. And then she asks again. Then there's a real fritzy sounding computer trying to say something.
Yeah.
And then she calls for a manual override and initiates a diagnostic of what's going on with the computer.
Yeah.
And she goes in the turbo lift and we hear the computer say diagnostic complete. 1/3 of the gel packs, basically 33.some%, are non-functioning. And so 7 decides to reroute some systems past those non-functioning gel packs to try to keep the power in the ship running. So the ship is really starting to lose its ability to sustain itself. So she says to reroute the systems around these non-functioning gel packs to try to keep things going. And we go to Astrometrics and there is a wide shot. We don't start close. I was so happy. A couple of wide shots in a row. We see the Astrometrics lab bay, room as she comes through the doors.
Yeah.
And it does push down from this big wide shot, probably a wide lens, like to talk camera lenses for a minute. It was probably like a 12 or 14 millimeter lens, a pretty wide lens. Mm-hmm. And it pushes from that wide lens down into her close up. And I did say, okay, I like the wide shot in that lens.
Yeah.
But it's not a good lens for a close up because those wide lenses distort faces. Mm. Luckily, they didn't stay in that for long. They cut around to the back.
But from this astrometric scene, we do learn that there are 6 days left.
6 days
to get past this nebula. We jump out into the corridor and she's walking along. And then all of a sudden she hears 7, help. And it's Paris's voice.
Paris. And she thinks, he's been waking up. So it would make sense.
Yeah.
He's going to this kind of handheld POV.
Right.
And everything's very dark. Mm-hmm. And she enters the stasis bay. And Deck this 14. Is where. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Paris and everyone is still in their chambers. They're still all asleep.
Safely in their stasis chambers. Yep. Paris is not sleep. He was not sleepwalking. He didn't come out.
Yep. Also, when she comes in, this is the point that I was talking about earlier. When she comes in, it's very creepy. We build up to the doors opening and she sees the stasis chambers, but it's only like the 5 of them. There's not the room behind or the mezzanine or anything. This is the moment where I was like, they cheaped out here.
Yeah, you caught it. After she realizes everyone is safe, then a proximity alert sounds. A vessel is approaching and all of a sudden someone hails Voyager. And we realize that somebody by the name of Tragis Lotarek Tragis Lotarek. What a name. Tragis Lotarek. Okay. Yep. He's in need of a microfusion chamber. So he wants to trade. And so Seven, she's game. She says, well, do you have any liquid helium? He says, oh, I have plenty. So she says, okay, fine. Let's, I'm going to beam you
over. I'll beam you right into the cargo bay.
And let's make this deal. Let's
make this trade.
Mm-hmm. So now they're in the cargo bay. And
what did she need the liquid helium for, by the way? I'm curious.
She had to fill the balloons up for the party.
You know, helium is a naturally occur is a limited resource. Helium is a limited resource.
Okay.
Because when I've done shows recently in the last couple of years, and we've had party scenes where you want, you know, lots of balloons, and maybe you're shooting that party for a week. So every day you've got to get, you know, 200 balloons every day, fresh balloons for the next day's work.
Right.
You can't get enough helium. There's a helium, a worldwide helium shortage the last couple of years.
My goodness.
So I never realized that it's a limited resource. So I wonder, I guess Seven needs liquid helium. I don't know what liquid helium is, but
I can just imagine us when we're really old talking to young people going, you young kids don't even know what it was like to inhale helium, and your voice sounded really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And the young kids will be saying, no more helium. What's that?
What's Mr. helium?
Mr. McNeil.
Yeah. But in the future, they'll have liquid helium.
Yeah. Liquid
helium. Synthetic liquid helium.
And he has plenty of it. So yes. There you go. They're in the cargo bay, and he asks about her unusual name, Seven of Nine. And she says, well, it's Borg. And he says, never heard of him. Just very nonchalantly.
Mm-hmm.
The way he played it was downright creepy.
Yeah, I wrote.
I mean,
creeps on her.
Yeah, it was to me.
Like, are you alone? He's following her.
It was like somebody who came up to the door, knocks on the door. The 12-year-old answers and says, "Yes, can I help you?" And the person's like, "Well, can I use your phone?" And then he comes in to use the phone and says, "Oh, are your parents at home?" And no, they're not. I got that whole feeling of like, yeah, it was creepy, and he was a predator. It was
sexual in some way.
It was just weird.
The other thing that was weird to me is she was very busy with her pad or tricorder or something, and going from box to box. She was walking all over this place, and he kept sort of leapfrogging and chasing her and walking, creeping on her.
Yeah.
But I kept thinking to myself, what is she doing? Like, what is her business? Is she doing inventory? Is she checking every box? And like, oh, I got to do inventory right now. Sorry.
No,
I just beamed you over here, but I'm just going to do inventory of this cargo bay. I mean, I know she was looking for the whatever he wanted. What did he want? The micro something?
Yeah, microfusion chamber. But
microfusion chamber.
Just the fact that she's busy doing inventory while
she's
he's
doing
there.
Inventory
it's
right
pretty
now.
Funny.
It's like, this is a good time for me to wander around every single box in cargo bay and scan it and make sure cross check my inventory list.
There's 12 EPS relays. I distinctly remember 11, and there's now
12.
This went
on a long time, and I kept thinking, what is she doing? Like, if she was looking for the microfusion chamber, she'd just go, where's the microfusion chamber? Oh, box number 37G. Right. There it is. Like, you know.
Okay.
Anyway, besides his creepiness, her inventory was creepy to me.
It was. He just a creepy scene all around. So he had tried 5 times to make it through this nebula, he says.
Yeah.
Right. So, but he's going to be the first of his species to make it through and see what's on the other side. And it'll be glorious. And Seven's like, she's very meh about this whole thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
He then asks Seven, how is she handling the loneliness? And then she says,
"That seems to stop her inventory."
Yeah, she didn't say anything. She stops taking inventory, and she looks over it, and he says, "I heard that drones can't stand being alone. They're too used to the collective." And this is that. It's so creepy because he had already said that he had never heard of the Borg,
but now
he clearly has heard of the Borg.
Uh-huh.
And even creepier later, he mentions, well, maybe we need to get something to eat and spend some time together, blah, blah. And she says, no, you will be, you know, this transaction, this term is finished, whatever, you must leave. And he says, well, and if I want to stay longer? And then she says, you will not be accommodated. I love that line.
Yes.
I want to say that from now on. If someone asks
you will
me
not
something,
be accommodated.
I'm going to say that to them in real life. I'm going to say, you will not be accommodated. It's just, it's so cool.
It's a pretty good answer.
It's a cool Borg answer, you know, yeah. And Seven said it. So this is another t-shirt idea, I think.
Yep.
So she pulls a phaser on him and says, and you know what? She should have said like, ooh, there's a phaser in this inventory list in this box, and pulls it out. She should have said that before she pulled it out. So she pulls it on him and says, let's get out of here. So she's escorting him through the corridor at phaser point.
Which by the way, she did a direct beam in into cargo bay. Couldn't she just tell the computer, beam him out of cargo bay and back where he came from right now?
Yes.
Bam, done.
Yes. Yes. Sherlock Holmes, you are right again. Why did
she walk him down the hallway for no apparent reason?
You're right. So he could have been beamed out right there, but it didn't. In her mind, he had to walk the plank. You're
going
to walk the plank to the transporter room, and I'm going to make you think about those horrible suggestions and creepiness that you've bestowed upon me. Yeah, so
she's walking him down. Yeah. And she hears Paris again.
Paris's voice.
And she turns around. She's like, where is he?
Yep.
And she looks back and
he's gone. The shadow of him running Tragis around the corner. Yeah.
Tragis is no more. He's Tragis, gone.
Tragis is an apparition. And she gets to sick bay and she tells the doctor, I've lost this alien. And the doctor's like, you know, he's tapping in the computer. He's like, well, that's interesting. Maybe he's cloaked. There's no sign of an alien. Maybe he has a cloak. There's no sign of a ship. There's no sign of nothing. So that's when you start realizing, is this a figment of her imagination? Mm-hmm. I don't know. And then, of course, another warning message. Deuterium tank levels are fluctuating beyond acceptable tolerances. Mm-hmm. At least I think that's what it was, because the voice got really at the very end of that. Beyond acceptable.
It was very funny because it was like beyond acceptable.
Yeah.
And the doctor's line, his response, he listens and he's got a funny face. And then he goes, the computer sounds like it needs a stimulant.
Yeah, that's what he said. That I loved. Which then reminded me of the episode Twisted. Of the episode where Janeway was on the ground or on the bed going, what did you say? Doggy doo doo. You were doing the impersonation of Janeway. So that's what I was thinking about during this scene.
But the doctor does say, he has a real moment here near the end of the scene. He says, Seven, are you frightened? Because he senses the fear and what's the anxiety going on. And she pauses for a long time. She looks at him and she says, I am Borg.
I am Borg. You will not be accommodated, Doctor.
Your fear will not be accommodated.
I am Borg. Yeah, that's awesome.
And now we're back in the hall and she's got the super cool rifle from First Contact, by the way.
The phaser.
Those are those rifles with the lights on them that they introduced in First Contact, by the way.
Do you think we ended up borrowing that from their reserve of stuff? Probably, right?
Yeah, probably. They were just like, let's make this look super badass. And give her those new fancy feature.
That was probably a Ken Biller special. He was probably pulling his weight going, I'm directing now. I'm going to use the stuff you used on the feature for my television show.
Let's up the ante here.
Yep.
She's very paranoid. She's hearing whispers and voices like a haunted ship everywhere.
Yeah. Well, the first sound I heard, there's like a bang on a bulkhead. And then you hear like a sound of a young girl going, do you hear that? Did you hear that? Okay. Mm-hmm. So then you're wondering, huh? Then you hear the first voice speaking. It's a male voice. Could not make out who it was. Second voice was Neelix. Then there's Janeway. Then you hear Paris. Then you hear Kim. And then you hear Chakotay. So you do hear quite a few of our regular heroes, our regular cast members in this kind of spooky.
In this kind of paranoid, creepy
scene.
Voices. And she keeps looking around, ends up back into the stasis chamber, and Paris and Harry are still sleeping in their beds.
Yeah, everyone's okay.
And
again, they did not show the rest of the room. Just deck 14 is just the five stasis chambers and the only two actors that they had coming in day after day to lie in them.
Were you and I. You did see Harry and Paris sleeping in their beds, but nobody else.
I would have loved to have seen Paris just randomly moving with his eyes closed.
trying to get out.
Something along those lines.
She goes back out in the hall. Tragis starts to speak to her. And I said to myself, it sounds like it's on a speaker. Like, I couldn't tell. Is this in her head? Is it in speaker? And he keeps talking to her. Yeah. Is it telepathic? I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
She doesn't respond. He says what sensors can't detect him. Yeah. Sensors can't pick up where he's at. She's going to have to ask him where he's at.
Right.
And
but no, but then he doesn't he say like, you know, well, I'm going to just give you, I'm not going to tell you, but I will say this. What would happen if the structural integrity around the warp coils collapsed? And so now she knows engineering.
So she runs to engineering, doors open, and the warp core is going kind of fast at this point, but it looks fine.
Yeah.
And he says now, well, I couldn't bring myself to destroy your ship. And then all of a sudden the lights go out, all the lights go out.
Yeah.
And she's kind of panicking here. And she finally does ask, where are you? And he goes, oh, I thought you'd never ask. And he says, I'm on the bridge where you can do just about anything from there.
Right. And that's when we hear Paris calling out, right? She looks up at the second level. It's Tom and Harry. And Tom
does the mezzanine.
Tom does a little Shatner acting up there. And he's like, and then that's when she rushes up.
Climbs up the ladder, gets up to the mezzanine, the balcony and the engineering, and looks over, and they're on fire.
They're laying on the ground on fire.
Laying on the ground on fire. And then she reacts to that. And then we cut back and then they vanish. They literally like burn into nothing.
That was really disturbing though, to watch us both on fire. I don't remember that scene at all from when I first watched this years ago. I had no recollection of that.
I remember filming it. I remember it was very simple for us because they didn't put fire on us.
No, I know.
We just laid down on the ground.
Yeah.
And then they locked the camera off. And then we laid there. And then we got up and then they got a clean plate.
Right. I mean, it wasn't
fire to it.
Correct. It was added, but I'm just saying it was disturbing to see the vis effects of us burning, you know?
I mean, it was.
You don't want to think about us ever burning ever in real life. So seeing this was
painful.
It's very painful. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
So Tragis is now just continuing to taunt her. And he talks about firing a torpedo. He talks about a few things. And then she decides to turn the tables on him. And she cuts off the oxygen to the bridge. Because she asked him where he is. He said the bridge. She turns off the oxygen. And now she's listening as he's gasping for breath. And gasping. And then he goes silent. She calls out to the doctor. He says, I fixed my mobile emitter. And he's marching very fast down the hallway. I'll meet you in engineering. And he's heading that way and the door's open, but to her surprise, it's not the doctor. And to our surprise, it's Tragis.
Tragis.
And she fires at him with her first contact phaser rifle.
No effect.
And he continues to taunt her and calls her an ex-drone, a pathetic ex-drone.
Weak.
Yes. You thought you could be a human, but you failed. And now you're just alone and weak and pathetic.
Yeah.
And also the warp core goes Borg green at this point as he's taunting her. The warp core goes from our normal blue
to green.
So we know that this is all hallucination.
Right.
At this point, like it's not Borg green. And then the doctor enters. Mm-hmm. You cut over to the doctor. We don't know how long he's been standing there actually. And he says, nobody's just
watching
there.
Her.
Who are you talking to?
Yeah.
Who are you talking to? Nobody is there.
Yeah. But he does offer an explanation, though. He says he studied the gel pack and he discovered that the radiation was producing a degradation in the synaptic relays. And then he says, well, I'm guessing that there's also a similar effect on your Borg implants, that the radiation could be altering the neurotransmitter levels in her sensory nodes. And this is what is causing the hallucination. So he has a real life answer to sort of like, put her at ease a little bit, you know, Seven, you know, you're not going crazy. This is happening to this ship, the gel packs, and now to you.
And this is where she tells the doctor a story, a very emotional story about when she was a drone. I thought Jerry Ryan did a great job here.
Yeah.
She says when she was a drone, she was separated from, the collective for 2 hours and she experienced panic. And she experienced apprehension.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I feel the same way now.
Now.
And it was very, very, I was very sympathetic for her.
I love this moment because this is the first time that Seven is vulnerable, like really vulnerable to the audience. And it's a nice moment because this is this is how you become fans of a character, right?
The
character lets you in on a little bit of their secret life or their emotional vulnerability, you know, and then all of a sudden you start cheering for that character.
Yeah.
And this is a good turn for us.
Yeah. It was a great moment. It was a great moment. And then in engineering, suddenly an EPS conduit, there's an explosion on a console.
Right.
And we realize the EPS conduits are failing.
Yeah.
And the doctor says he tied in his hollow matrix to the EPS conduits and he starts fritzing out.
Yeah.
And it's a nice pullback shot of Seven standing all alone in engineering.
Yeah.
Gonna have to do this all herself.
I wrote that down. I said, I like the pullback to show how alone she is. Mm-hmm. And to be perfectly honest, this is the only time I really noticed the pullback was in this shot. You noticed everything before this. So thank you for bringing that up and letting me know that there were multiple moments of pullback. But this is the one that I thought was the most effective, at least.
This one was very, very well designed because it was a wide shot. It showed us context and it showed us the whole room and sad, scared little Seven in the engineering. It was good.
Oh yeah.
So we go to Astrometrics next. Seven's working and she's talking to the computer. How much further? Basically, she's trying to find out how much further.
17
hours. We hear a voice say, "It doesn't matter. You won't make it." And we reveal zombie. I'm going to call him Zombie Harry.
I wrote Radiation Harry, but okay, you can do that.
I like Zombie Harry.
Okay.
Harry's hanging out with her and she's not even looking at him. She knows now that she's hallucinating all this. And
I actually remember filming this scene. I remember when I came on set and Jerry was like, "Hey, Gooby, I think you got some food on your face," is what she said.
Oh, that's funny.
Just messing with me, you know, because it's quite obvious that there's a lot of junk on my face, clearly. But yeah, Zombie Harry toying with Seven.
Mm-hmm.
It's a funny scene.
And he comes over. He says, "You can't shut me out."
Yeah.
And I wrote down close talking. It was a little close talking there.
More close.
But there's only, if we do find out, 17 hours, 20 minutes left. She heads out of Astrometrics, leaving Zombie Harry by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And out in the hall, it looks like a Borg hallway. It's all green. There's smoke. Yeah. Suddenly a drone appears. Mm-hmm. And I made a big note here. I said, this Borg drone does not walk like a Borg. He looked very human to me. I thought his delivery of the dialogue was all good, but his physicality was much too, he was just sort of walking like a human.
Well, this is pretty early in Ron Ostro's career as well, right? So maybe he wasn't as comfortable, you know, he wasn't as relaxed as he could have been.
Yeah, maybe he hadn't seen like First Contact. Maybe he didn't know, but I did make a note that this really jumped out at me as being, I don't think they sustained the kind of robotic, you know, movement, the physicality that we, you know, that we've seen established on our show and in the movie and all those things.
Well, I'm going to suggest that is not Ron's fault. And that is Ken Biller's fault. Ken should have been able to debrief this actor and say, Hey, let me just quickly show you a scene from First Contact. Yeah. If you don't know, this is the physicality of a Borg. And I want you to sort of mimic this the best that you can. So this is really a Ken Biller issue.
Because he was chasing her through the halls quite a bit. And, you know,
You can't be walking like a human strolling through Central Park. Okay.
No. It felt a little bit like that. That's probably an exaggeration. It wasn't that casual, but it was enough
that you noticed it. It did stand out, right? So
it did
so that's a problem then. It is a problem.
Basically, though, he's there to say, you know, a Borg cannot be one. You cannot be one person alone.
Mm-hmm.
You will not survive.
And
she says, "No, I will survive alone.
Yeah,
I will adapt." And he says, "No,
weak.
You will die alone." Exactly. Ooh. Die alone. What a horrible thing to say.
It is a horrible thing. It's horrible.
Yes, it is.
So now we're in the turbo lift and she's trying to shut that drone's voice out. And now guess what? Tragis shows up Tragia shows up and he says, "You're in pain, Seven. I can help you.
I can help
and
you."
As he creepily strokes her face with his alien hand, I have to stop and say, makeup department, excellent job on the hand. My goodness, that hand looked really, really detailed and wonderfully alien-like. So I thought, good job. And the door opens to show the interior of a Borg cube. And so you hear,
just make a choice. You don't have to. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, you know, even ask me for anything. Just step through that door.
Step through.
Walk right through.
Mm-hmm. And you hear resistance is futile. And now.
And she knows that this is all her hallucination.
This is all in her head.
She yells, "Bridge!"
Yeah.
To the turbo lift.
Right.
She's kind of freaking out at this point.
She is.
We go to the bridge. Mm-hmm. And there are Captain Janeway and Chakotay and Harry and Paris and Tuvok. Mm-hmm. All of them, like a Greek, I wrote down like a Greek chorus.
Yeah, Greek chorus of doubting voices. Yeah.
I honestly wish we had been staged at our normal stations and just more casually sort of tossing, "Oh, you're not going to make it." And she, like, as if we're sort of ghosts at our station, because there was something about the formality of us standing and delivering that made it actually less dramatic to me. It seems
I hear you, but the way it was set up, the introduction of this scene is that she's in the turbo lift, so it's her POV as it opens, and as it opens, she would only really see you at Khan, you know, and maybe the back of Janeway's head, like, a little bit, right? She couldn't have seen Tuvok and Kim,
or if she had stepped out and the POV had panned across see everybody.
Yeah. Okay,
I don't know. There could have been a way. It just felt like the staging of us just standing there.
Yeah.
was kind of forced to me,
but you're right, it was a Greek chorus, and the Greek mm-hmm. chorus stands together, they're not apart, and so really I'm okay with it, but I see what you're saying. It would have been creepier if we were at our stations and just talking, but I do find that it was interesting that all the Voyager main characters are just the personification of doubt.
Yep.
That's it. That's what we were. Doubt in her mind.
Yeah. Paris says at one point, "Now, what do you think she's thinking?" And Janeway says, "I know what she's thinking." So we know that these are all voices in her head that know what she's thinking. She wants to reroute the power from the stasis chambers to the engine.
Yes.
To keep the engines running, she's going to have to sacrifice some of the crew. And if she doesn't keep the engines running, then the whole crew will die. So she's in a bit of a pickle here.
Yes. Let me just go back just for a second. So when we have that warning of that propulsion system failure in progress, Tuvok says, "What is she doing?" Chakotay says, "She's trying to keep the engines online." Paris says, "Place your bets. Anybody think she can do it?" Kim says, "I'll lay odds that she can't." And I just made a note. This is the only time, one of the few times that gambling
yes,
his reference dialogue is going on, because I'm sitting here going, "Oh my God, laying odds. That's something that I do at the craps table," you know? So I was very shocked to notice that this was used on a Star Trek Voyager episode. Yeah. And I say, I'll lay odds that she can't. And there's 41 minutes left. And Harry says, someone says it's too long, she won't make it. And Harry says, "That's an eternity. That's an eternity." And I say the same line that I said back in Astrometrics. I said, "That's an eternity back then." And I'm still having problems with it now, 20, 30 years later.
That's an eternity.
Yeah, that's an eternity. Saying that to me is a tongue twister. That's an eternity.
That's eternity. An eternity.
That's an eternity. Eternity. It's just the getting the last T in eternity to be pronounced is hard for me to do that, because
but
I think
did
it's
it.
Because
you nailed it.
Oh no.
You made it
work. I didn't make it work in Astrometrics. Every now and then one word will kind of trip me up, and that's one of them. And I felt that weird that they repeated the same line from Astrometrics to here, but that's okay. You know, it's not a horrible thing that it was repeated.
She does end up rerouting power from 10 of the stasis chambers to propulsion systems.
Correct.
And resumes course. Mm-hmm. And at the end, Paris says, "I win. I knew she didn't care about him."
Yeah.
And I was like,
"I win.
Hey, there's the bet. I was the winner, I guess."
I suppose.
I guess I was part of that bet.
Yes, you were part of the bet. And then she rushes to deck 14. Because after you go, "I win," she didn't care about us, she felt bad.
Yes.
It was your words that prompted her to rush.
And Paris is dying when she comes into the...
But before she comes in, guess who's standing at the doorway to deck 14? Zombie/radiation Janeway says, come to watch them die, is what she says, right? So it's freaky, it's scary, opens up, and Paris is choking. He's gagging. He's shatnering all over the place inside that stasis tube. And how many minutes left? 11 minutes left at this point to get through.
Yeah.
And Seven makes the decision. She cuts life support to all the decks, reroutes any available power to the failing stasis units, which would be Tom Paris's, Harry Kim's, random background person, Tuvok, and Janeway. So those are the five that are right there, right? That's 1 through 10, or at least 1 through 5, at least.
Yep. But she's gonna save those people and sacrifice herself by taking life support offline, and she starts losing consciousness. And the last thing she says is, "She will adapt."
She says, "I am 7 of 9. I am alone, but I will adapt." Very heroic of her to give up her life. Because, you know, for all intents and purposes, she knows I'm cutting off ability to survive, but I'm going to, you know, the needs.
Going to save. Yep.
Yeah. The needs of the many.
Of the many.
The needs of the few. Right. Yeah. So she let herself sacrifice her own life for this.
And we think she's going to die, and it kind of goes to black. And then we see a POV in sickbay, and there's a healthy looking Janeway and doctor. And I think Chakotay was in there, and we realize that she lived, and she's in the surgical bay in sickbay. And she seems very shaken when she sits up, but she says she was glad to help. And Janeway says, "I want to, you know, once you recover, I want to hear all about this." And I made a note that I felt like all the other actors seems so relaxed, like they had a nice nap in the stasis chair. They missed all of this drama. They just went to sleep.
Yeah, you mean because the way Janeway says, "Hey, I've heard you've had an adventure. I'd like to hear about it sometime." Yeah, it's just so casual. It's
casual and relaxed. Yeah. And Seven, poor Seven, is just like, you can see how shaken she is and how she's just been traumatized by this thing.
She's traumatized.
Then we go to mess hall, and Seven comes into mess hall, and she asks if she can join Harry and Tom and B'Elanna. They're sitting down eating, and she says she felt the need for some companionship. And I love that Paris took a shot at the doctor here. Paris goes, "Well, after a month with only the doc for company, I can understand that." Because I think the doc took a couple shots at Tom.
Oh, yeah. He has. But he also took shots at you in the episode Living Witness, when he talks about the holodeck recreation of all the Voyager characters not being anywhere close to how they really are in real life.
Oh, that's right.
Well, except for Tom Paris. So he took a shot at you there. He took a shot at you in this episode.
When I'm not around to defend myself.
Shot back at the hologram. Yeah. There you go. I also love how Borgism, when she says, when Torres says, "You should have some soup. It's actually pretty good." And Seven goes, "I don't require nourishment at this time." And I think I'm going to use that too. When someone goes, "You want to grab some food?" I'm like, "I don't really require nourishment at this time." I want to say the same thing.
Yeah, right? Good Borg talk.
Yeah, Borg talk.
She did tell everybody that on 4 separate occasions, they had to put Tom Paris back in his stasis chamber. And they're like, Harry asks, like, "Why? What?" And Paris is like, "I don't know why. I just don't like small spaces." Yeah. And then Seven ends the episode with, "Well, perhaps you dislike being alone." And she can appreciate the company and connection and people. So she's grown a lot in this episode.
Yeah, she big really character has. Development episode for Seven.
And that's the end of our episode.
That is it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your lesson, whether real or comedic, is?
My lesson, my theme for this episode is really that connection and company are important to feel truly human. That Seven was on her journey to become more human, and she really learned this lesson of connection, how important that is, and not feeling alone. Yeah, I think that's really important for everyone to, whatever they're going through, good or bad. If you're going through something good, it's great to not feel alone so you can celebrate with other people. And if you're going through something bad, it really clearly is important to remember that no one's ever alone.
Okay.
So yeah. What's your lesson?
My lesson is, kids, don't invite strangers into the house when your parents are gone. That's my lesson.
They'll be creepy.
They will be creepy. And, you know, they're not there for what they said they were there for, for that trade that was going to happen. No.
I have a question, though. So if this guy Tragis,
yes,
he kept telling about, you know, oh, he's tried four times to get through this nebula. And
five.
This is five times. This is all made up in her head. Like, there was no real alien.
No, correct.
This is just a figment of her imagination. So
very
I guess
elaborate,
this is just,
elaborate figment of
her imagination. So I guess this is just sort of a composite of other aliens she's met, that sort of her paranoia and her loneliness sort of created this.
Or other aliens she's assimilated in the past. Okay.
What would you give this 1 out of 10?
I'm going to say 7. I'm going to give it a 7.
Samesies.
Wow.
Sevensies.
Yeah.
We're both in the 7. Yeah. I'm a
we
solid
give a
7 on this.
To the 7 episode. For 7 of 9. Yeah. Look at that.
I really think it's a good episode, but I missed having all our characters involved. I really, as I've said, that's a deal breaker for me. I would have gone higher because it is a real good. Jerry's performance was great. Mm-hmm. I think the concept is really good and the character development for her was really good, but I just missed having our whole cast involved in some way.
Yeah.
A little more. So,
but I did find it fun to see radiation / zombie characters talking. I mean, just playing radiation zombie Harry was super fun to be able to be like, you'll never make it, you know, all this like stuff where we're teasing her and taunting her. So that was different for us too. Like we didn't get to speak that way. So it was kind of nice, a little bit of variety. Yeah. And you're right. Whenever we did see scenes with some of our main characters, it was refreshing. It was like, oh, they're still part of the show, you know? So we're like, there they are.
I know.
So,
I missed them. Yeah.
I agree.
Well, all good. Right. What's next week?
Yeah. So next week, believe it or not, is our final episode of season 4. We wrap up season 4 with Hope and Fear. Hope and Fear is the final episode of fourth season. So that's our next episode that we will be recapping.
Hope and Fear.
Yeah. Okay. Hope and Fear. Alrighty. So
great.
Thank you everyone for tuning in to our recap and discussion of 1, and join us next week when Robbie and I discuss Hope and Fear. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.
Bye.